Thought of anti-serum. Pancho pulled a slim vial from her open travel bag and wagged it in front of the inspector's bulging eyes. He shook his head in wonder as Pancho coaxed the snake back around her ankle. And he eats mice? She, Pancho said as she straightened up again. When I stay up here for more than a month, I have to send Earthside for more mice. Costs a bundle. I'll bet. The mice never get out of their cage, Pancho added. Once every other week, I put Ellie in with them. The inspector shuddered visibly. He took Pancho's entry forms and passed them in front of the electronic reader. The machine beeped once. Pancho was cleared. The inspector put the transparent mouse cage back in her flight bag and zipped it shut. You're okay to enter Cellini, he said, almost as if he didn't believe it himself. Thank you. Before she could hoist her bag onto her shoulder, he asked, what are you doing for dinner tonight? Pancho smiled her sweetest. Gee, I'd love to have dinner with you, but I already have a date. Dressed in a crisp white pantsuit, set off by the flowery scarf she'd tied around her neck, Pancho followed the directions Martin Humphreys had video-mailed to her. In Earthside cities, height meant prestige. In hotels and condo towers, the higher the floor, the higher the price. Penthouses were considered the most desirable, and therefore were the most expensive. On the moon, where human settlements were dug into the ground, prestige increased with depth. The airless lunar surface was dangerous, subject to 400-degree temperature swings between sunlight and shadow, bathed in hard radiation from deep space, peppered with meteoric infall. So in Cellini and the other communities on the moon, the deeper your living quarters, the more desirable it was, and the more expensive. Martin Humphreys must be rotten rich, Pancho thought as she rode the elevator down to Cellini's lowest level. According to the biofiles on the nets, Humphreys was supposed to be one of the wealthiest men in the Earth-Moon system. But that could be public relations puffery, she thought. The tabloids and scandal sites had more on him than the biofiles. They called him Hump, or the Humper. He had a reputation as the chaser, married twice, and with lots of media stars and glamour gals from the upper crust to boot. When Pancho looked up the pics of his dates, she saw a succession of tall, languid, gorgeous women with lots of hairdo and skimpy clothes. Pancho felt completely safe. The Humper wouldn't be interested in a gangly, horse-faced tomboy. Besides, if he tried anything, Ellie would protect her. He had called her personally. No flunky. Martin Humphreys' own self had phoned Pancho and asked her to come to his home to discuss a business proposition. Maybe he wants to hire me away from Astro, she thought. Astro's been a good enough outfit, but if Humphreys offers more money, I'll go to work for him. That's a no-brainer. Go where the money is, every time. But why did he call me himself, instead of having his personnel office interview me? There were only a few living units carved into the rock this far underground. Big places, Pancho realized as she glided along the well-lit corridor in the practice bent-kneed shuffle that you had to use to walk in the moon's low gravity. The walls of the corridor were carved with elaborate low-relief sculptures, mostly astronomical motifs, but there were some earthly landscapes in with the stars and comets. She counted about 100 strides between doors, which meant that the living units on the other sides of the corridor walls were bigger than the whole dorm section on the floors above. The doors were fancy, too. Most of them were double, all of them decorated one way or another. Some of them looked like real wood, for crying out loud. But while all this impressed Pancho, she was totally unprepared for Martin Humphrey's home. At the very end of the corridor was a blank metal door, polished steel from the look of it, more like an airlock hatch or a bank vault than the fancy-pants doors she'd passed along the corridor. It slid open with a soft hiss as Pancho approached within arm's length. Optical recognition system, she thought, or maybe he's got somebody watching the corridor. She stepped through the open doorway and immediately felt as if she'd entered another world. She found herself in a wide, high-ceilinged cavern, a big natural cave deep below the lunar surface. Flowers bloomed everywhere. Reds and yellows and green foliage spread out on both sides of her. Trees! She gaped at the sight of young alders and maples, slim white-boled birches, delicately fronded frangipani. The only trees she'd seen in Cellini were up in the Grand Plaza, and they were only little bitty things compared to these. After the closed-in gray sameness of Cellini's warren of corridors and tightly confined living quarters, the openness, the color, the heady scent of flowers growing in such profusion nearly overwhelmed Pancho. Boulders jutted here and there. The distant walls of the cave and the ceiling high above were rough, bare rock. The ceiling was dotted with full-spectrum lamps, she saw. Geez, it's like being in Oz, Pancho said to herself. Like Oz, there was a path winding through the shrubbery, littered with flower petals. Pancho liked that much better than yellow bricks. She realized there were no birds singing in the trees, no insects buzzed among the flowers. There was no breeze sighing past. This ornate garden was nothing more than a big, elaborate hothouse, Pancho decided. It must cost a freaking fortune. She glide-walked along the path until a final turn revealed the house, set in the middle of the cavern, surrounded by still more trees and carefully planted beds of roses, irises, and peonies. No daisies, Pancho noted. No marigolds. Too ordinary for this layout. The house was enormous, low but wide, with a slanted roof and walls of lunar stone smoothed and glazed over. Big, sweeping windows. A wide courtyard framed the big double doors of the front entrance, with a fountain gurgling busily in its center. A fountain! Pancho approached the door slowly, reached out her hand to touch its carved surface. Plastic, her fingertips told her, stained to look like wood. For several moments, she stood at the door, then turned to look back at the courtyard again, the gardens, the trees, the fountain. What kind of man would spend so much money for a private palace like this? What kind of man would have that much money to spend? Welcome, Ms. Lane. The sound of his voice made Pancho flinch. He had opened the door silently while her back had been turned as she surveyed the greenery. She saw a man, apparently about her own age, several centimeters shorter than she, a little on the pudgy side. He was wearing an open-necked pale yellow tunic that came down to his hips. His slacks were cinnamon brown, perfectly creased. His feet were shod in fancy tooled leather boots. His skin was doughy white, his hair dark and slicked back. "I'm here to see Mr. Humphreys," she said. "I've been invited." He laughed lightly. "I'm Martin Humphreys. I gave my staff the night off."
"Oh."
Martin Humphreys gestured Pancho to come into his house. Knowing Ellie was comfortably wrapped around her ankle, Pancho stepped right in. The house was just as luxurious as the grounds around it, perhaps even more so. Big, spacious rooms filled with the most beautiful furniture Pancho had ever seen. A living room long enough to hold a hockey rink, sofas done in gorgeous fabrics, hollow windows showing spectacular earthside scenery, the Grand Canyon, Mount Fujiyama, Manhattan's skyline, the way it looked before the floods. The dining room table was big enough to seat 20, but it was set for just the two of them. Humphreys at its head, Pancho at his right hand. Humphreys walked her past it, though, and into a book-lined library, where the single hollow window showed the star-strewn depths of space. There was a bar along one side of the library. "What would you like to drink?" Humphreys asked, gently guiding her to one of the plush cushioned stools. "Whatever," Pancho shrugged. A good way to judge a man's intentions was to let him select the drinks. He looked at her for a fleeting, intense moment, like being X-rayed, Pancho thought. His eyes were gray, she noted, cold gray, like lunar stone. "I have an excellent champagne," he suggested. Pancho smiled at him. "Okay, fine." He pressed a button set into the bar's surface, and a silver tray bearing an open bottle of champagne in a refrigerated bucket and two tall fluted glasses rose up to serving height with a muted hum of an electric motor. Humphreys pulled the bottle from its bucket and poured two glasses of champagne. Pancho noticed that the ice-cold bottle quickly beaded with condensation. The glasses looked like real crystal, probably made at Cellini's glass factory. The bubbles tickled her nose, but the wine was really good, crisp and cold, with a delicate flavor that Pancho liked. Still, She merely sipped at it as she sat beside Martin Humphreys on the softly cushioned barstool.